Say hello to John. John dreamed of building a successful business and retiring to an exotic island in the Caribbean. He dreamed about his sales soaring and all the money that would be flowing in. He dreamed of hiring a sales team and expanding his company. Well, sadly, that dream fell apart when his bank turned down his business loan. Now John is not dreaming about going to the Caribbean anymore. He's driving around in an old beat-up pickup truck. If you need money to grow your business to new heights so you can reach your dreams, don't let the bank hold you down. You need to call Merchant Advance Express today. We can help you get qualified for up to $250,000 to grow your business any way you want. Call now to learn more. Call 800-503-3735, 800-503-3735, 800-503-3735. That's 800-503-3735.
From the campus of Yale University, this is Business Talk with Jim Campbell, syndicating across the country on the Business Talk Radio Network and coming to you from our flagship stations, Yale Radio, WYBC.com, and 1490 AM WGCH, Greenwich, Connecticut. All talk and all business, 60 minutes of radio with leading figures from the world of business, along with the business of politics and sports. Murder in Greenwich. On our show last month, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. in a new book framed Why Michael Skakel Spent a Decade in Prison for a Murder He Didn't Commit, puts his reputation on the line for his cousin, proclaiming his innocence, charging he was framed, claiming he could ID the real killers today, a rebuttal to the Bobby Kennedy interview with two experts on the Martha Moxley murder case on Business Talk with Jim Campbell. Regardless of whether you think Michael Skakel's innocent or guilty, Len Levitt's one of the unsung heroes. He's sought the truth on this case for over 40 years, hired by the Greenwich Times Stanford Advocate to investigate in 1975 the murder of Martha Moxley. The papers lacked the courage for a long time to publish the results of his investigative reporting. His 1991 article helped relaunch the police investigation that led to the arrest of Michael in 2000. He's the author of Conviction About the Case. He currently runs the website NYPD Confidential. In studio as well, Bob Drake, documentary filmmaker. He spent the last several years working on a book with Ken Littleton, the former Skakel tutor, who was at one time the major suspect in the Moxley murder. His book has the working title, Bad Faith, RFK Jr. and the Scapegoating of the Skakel Family Tutor. Again, thanks to both of you. Bobby, as you know, did an incredibly detailed, compelling book, so we're going to try and be just as detailed as we return. One of the interesting things as I started with Bobby was his book is named Framed. To me, Michael wasn't a suspect until he put himself at the crime scene, and we're going to start off with a cut from the Hoffman tapes, which is the book that Michael was going to have written.
I got on my bike and went uptown. I'm like, this is crazy. What am I doing this for? I turned around, came back, and when I was going down Walsh Lane, there was like up in police cars everywhere, and I'm like, what happened? And they said they found Martha dead, like 200 yards in, and like that second place where I was yelling in, that's where they said she was hit and dragged all the way back there. And I remember thinking, oh my God. If I tell anybody that I was out that night, they're going to say I did it.
All right. Len's book, the full title is Conviction, Solving the Moxley Murder, A Reporter and a Detective's 20-Year Search for Justice. Now we've had this habeas corpus ruling that's freed Michael. Is it no longer solved in your mind?
Oh, it's solved in my mind. I think the judge wasn't talking about Michael's guilt or innocence. He was talking about the competency or incompetence of his attorney, Mickey Sherman.
Okay, let me ask you this. Bobby doesn't seem to like you all that much. You broke the Sutton report. You worked closely with Frank Gar, who was a Greenwich police officer and then with the state's attorney's office. And he's accused Gar of suborning perjury and that you had a secret book deal. Let's have cut 28.
I show in the book using the police's own transcripts of those interviews that the police officer, a corrupt police officer, Frank Gar, suborned perjury from these witnesses by offering them a share of $100,000 reward money if they would change their testimony and say that they heard Michael confess. And people, nobody knew this before this book.
That's from Yahoo News. Stephanie Tsai, your response?
I've never heard that before. That's absolutely incredible. But Bobby's whole book is incredible. So where does this come from? Where is he getting this information that Frank Gar offered a $100,000 reward? I have never heard that before.
All right, let's get to...
What's the attribution for that?
Oh, I can tell you that.
Go ahead.
When he talks about this secret tape recording of Frank suborning perjury, he's actually talking about the first time that Frank called Higgins. What he doesn't tell any of his readers is that Chuck Segan had called Frank 3 days prior to this and told him that some 6 to 8 months prior to that, Higgins had actually told him this whole confession story. He also doesn't mention that Harry Kranich, in addition, supported this concept. Higgins was reluctant when he got on the phone. Frank had to get him to come forward.
Right.
But there was a mention in there of there being a reward, and it is true that Higgins had to come back 3 days later to actually tell the whole story. But in no way is it the story that Bobby's telling in his book.
It doesn't appear, in other words, that...
It's not even clear. I have the thing right here if anyone wants to read it. And,
right.
And the reason he calls it a secret, it wasn't secret at all. Mickey had all these transcripts in Discovery, and he used them all. I mean, Chuck Segan testified at the trial. When you read Bobby's book, you would think that Higgins is coming in and saying, he never confessed, and then Frank says, well, here's some reward money, and then he goes back and says, but it's a...
Well, Len, and clearly you're not going to say that you and him had some secret book deal, that he was feeding you confidential information that he shouldn't have been?
No, as a matter of fact, I tried to get him to feed me confidential information, and he never would do it. And he said, you know, I'm going to help you after the trial is over, and I'll be glad to do that. But there was nothing. I know they tried to make it like that at the trial, and I understand that Hubie Santos, who was the lawyer for Michael at that point, was telling people that I was secretly paying Frank Gar, which, you know, journalism 101,
yeah.
You don't pay anybody. And, you know, I was working for Newsday at the time. Do I clear it with Newsday? They would never have countenanced anything like that. And I certainly don't have the money myself to pay him. I mean, it's the nuts.
All right. Two of obviously the big points we're going to get to in this segment are he IDs who he says are the real killers, and then that Michael couldn't have done it because he was 11 miles away. So we'll start with the caveman, the two folks that Bobby said were ones responsible. Do cut 39, which is from Business Talk with Jim Campbell.
I finally reached him on the phone. I said to him, I'm Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Michael Skakel's my cousin. I'd like to ask you about Martha Moxley's murder. And there was dead silence on the end of the line. And then he said, after about 5 seconds, he said, I've been waiting 27 years for this phone call.
Either one of you want to handle that he's talking about Gaetano, Tony, Brian, who's announced that Burton Tinsley and Adolph Hasbrouck are the real killers.
Yeah, I'll handle that. Tony Bryan is completely unreliable. He's a convicted, what did he do? He did a house invasion. He claimed he himself was kidnapped. He owes the government $6 million in back taxes. He was later fired from a Texas law firm, he told them he had passed the Texas bar, which he hadn't. He's completely unreliable. The only person who believes anything that this man says is Bobby Kennedy.
What is Tony Bryant's incentive to do this?
Okay, so Bobby Kennedy said to me, he's got, what is his incentive? I mean, he's obviously telling the truth, because why else would he come forward?
Right.
Who knows what this guy's incentive is? He probably wants attention of some kind. The significant thing is he wouldn't tell his story under oath. He wouldn't talk to law enforcement people. Bobby sent me an email recently saying that Bryant is willing to come forward and testify if he's granted immunity. Question: immunity from what?
Let me, and you can handle this. I think, Bob, because we've talked about that. He, in his video deposition with Vito Colucci, names a whole bunch of people he saw in Greenwich that night.
It's true. He named a few people. No one has corroborated any. Bobby likes to say that Jeffrey Byrne corroborated Gaetano Bryant, and Jeffrey Byrne is dead. Yeah. And the person who told us what Jeffrey Byrne said is Gaetano. So Gaetano is corroborating himself. But I think the other thing that I think is important here, that statement that you just played, he says, and I called him and I said, I'm Bobby Kennedy. And he said, I've been waiting, pause.
Yeah.
I've been waiting for this call for 27 years. Well, Bobby submitted all the tape-recorded phone calls he had with Gaetano Bryant, and that is not actually in the first phone call. So it's... Nothing like that. Yeah,
he never says, I've been waiting 27 years.
No, not at all. No. That's what's so interesting. It's such a dramatic... I think that statement is made up out of whole cloth for drama, because it's such a good one. Everyone who hears that, you hear the people that he tells it to go, wow.
Okay, play cut 38B from the Lisa Wexler show.
I believe, I prove beyond a reasonable doubt that these two men committed the crime. And what I've said about them is, I'm saying they committed murder.
Yeah.
If they didn't, if they're innocent, they should sue me.
Yeah, so, right.
But so they're not gonna.
So what?
Because then I would depose them, and you know I've already got them on tape, lying their heads off, and admitting that they were in Belhaven. They admitted that they were in Belhaven that night.
So how can you get away with framing people that are innocent, or why don't they sue him?
My understanding is, talking to First Amendment lawyers, even if they sue him now, I was just talking to a guy in New York the other day about it, and he said, show the damages. Did he lose his job? Did any of these guys lose their jobs? What specifically are the damages? I don't know what the damages are other than they
reputation.
Reputation, right. And I you know, that's probably a difficult, you know, not a First Amendment lawyer myself, but I suspect that they're afraid to come up with somebody with deep pockets, to come up against somebody like Bobby Kennedy with deep pockets, and that's why they didn't sue. That may change, however, as this goes on and becomes clear that Bobby made this whole thing up and was taken in by Tony Bryant. Of course, he wanted to be taken in, so...
You're listening to Business Talk with Jim Campbell over the Business Talk Radio Network, 350 stations around the country. We'll be back. We'll explore Michael's alibi next.
Have you heard? Proactiv Plus is faster and better than ever. Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway, and you'll also receive free shipping. Do you have troubled skin? Acne? Well, we have great news. With Proactiv Plus, your acne can heal, and you can help prevent new breakouts from happening. Don't miss this limited-time offer. Give us a call at 800-726-1031, because we're going to let a million people try Proactiv Plus risk-free. And get two free gifts and also receive free shipping when you call right now. You heard it. This offer won't last long. So call Proactiv Plus now and you'll receive a 60-day risk-free trial of Proactiv Plus, two free extras, and free shipping. Call 800-726-1031. This is our exclusive radio offer, never on TV. Get your risk-free 60-day trial of Proactiv Plus with free shipping. That's right, free shipping. Don't wait. Call 800-726-1031. That's 800-726-1031.
National Funding Group has just released $100 million in easy access small business funding to businesses that gross at least $100,000 a year. You can have fast access up to $500,000 in new business capital in as little as 48 hours. Think about the ways you could grow your business if you had up to $500,000 cash infusion. Call a NFG funding expert now. The process is easy. It only takes about 5 minutes. Then our management-owned lending team looks at your application for a fast approval. You can get 100% funded in about 2 days. If you need up to $500,000 in working capital to run your business and you gross at least $100,000 a year, call NFG and apply today. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. That's 800-296-1564.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right, General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait.
Call 800-605-5370, 800-605-5370, call 800-605-5370.
605-5370.
If your credit card bills have gotten out of hand, call Consolidated Credit now. If you're making the minimum payments, but your balance is just not going down, call Consolidated Credit now. If the interest rates on your credit cards are so high, it will take years to get out of debt, call Consolidated Credit now. They've helped over 5 million people with credit card debt. They can consolidate your debts into one lower payment, reduce your interest rates, and get you out of debt fast. If you're struggling with credit card debt, the first step is yours. Call Consolidated Credit now. Call 800-463-1749. 800-463-1749. That's 800-463-1749. Consolidated Credit Counseling Services Incorporated, 5701 West Sunrise Boulevard, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33313. Not a loan company. Licensed by the New York Department of Financial Services and by the Vermont Department of Financial Regulation. Maryland DM19, Oregon DM80031. Licensed by the Virginia State Corporation Commission. License number DC32.
BizTalkRadio.com.
And we're back talking with experts on the Moxley murder, Len Levitt and Bob Drake. I want to get now to the other big point that Bobby Kennedy makes over and over again, which is that Michael was 11 miles away, so therefore he could not and did not do the murder. Let's get Cut 19 from the Today Show and Matt Lauer.
The most powerful piece of evidence is that he could not have done it because he was 11 miles away with five eyewitnesses, plus there was another eight witnesses at the house with him, to the kind of who never saw him the entire first family loyalty to him leave, who, you know, who committed a murder.
All right, Bob, that's somewhere between 5 and 13 people who can give him an alibi.
The five people he's talking about are Jimmy, Rush, Johnny, and also Dennis Osorio and his cousin George Ann. George Ann, under oath, both at the grand jury and during the trial, claimed she didn't see them, so that she's not an eyewitness. So take it down to four. The question about the eight witnesses who saw him leave and claimed they saw him leave and knew when he got back, there were two potential witnesses who saw him leave, which were Tommy and Martha, no one else. And as far as seeing him come back, no one saw him come back. So that's 0 for 8 on his return. The most important witness, who never gets talked about in this book, was Julie Skakel. Because Julie Skakel, after the Lincoln had left, came out of the house, got in the car, and realized she didn't have her keys with her. And she sent Andrea back in. And right then, at a time when Tommy and Martha were positioned at the side door, a figure ran by her and said, and she yelled at the figure, "Michael, come back here," because she, quote, thought it was Michael, unquote. That was very important to the jurors who asked for a readback on Julie's testimony. You won't find it in Bobby's book. You won't find it in his 2003 article. Julie was in tears when Mickey was trying to convince her to say that Lincoln was still in the driveway when this happened in order to shift the time around. But this is a bona fide thing for juries to think about, because no one has come forward, a look-alike figure, to claim that they were the person who was running.
Well, not only that, doesn't Andrea or Julie's later testimony say at 9:50 there was this big figure that looks closer to Al Hasbrook?
This is actually the most significant thing. When he did his first article, he had only the unredacted police reports to go on. So he was unaware that Julie had had this sighting, I think, at the time, in 1991, when you first wrote the article. But this is the one contribution that Tom Keegan really made to the case, was he redacted this interview. And Julie, when she was interviewed by the Sutton Associates in 1991, she wasn't aware that she had said this. So she told a whole story. She had transmogrified, either by hypnosis or by lack of memory, this memory into something that happened when she got home.
Right.
Let me just jump in with one point here, is that this is predicated on the fact that the murder took place at 9:50, shortly before 10 o'clock. And it's not clear at all that that's really what happened. I mean, this is a flaw in the case. The Greenwich police really accepted that line of thinking because two dogs were barking uncontrollably. And the Sutton guys accepted that, too. And I remember Frank Gar saying to this Billy Krebs, one of the Sutton investigators, "Gee, I'd sure like to interview those dogs." It is not at all clear that that's what happened. The second scenario is that this happened after Michael returned from the Terrians. And it happened when Michael Remember Michael's first story was he went came back from the Terrians, he went right to bed. His second story was that he went out at midnight. And then he climbed the tree, claimed he climbed the tree outside Martha's window, masturbated in the tree, ran by the crime scene. That's the second scenario about when this murder occurred. You know, the case was flawed from the beginning. But to me, you know, sitting through that trial, that was the question I was saying to myself. If I were the jurors, I would really be skeptical about exactly what happened because nobody knows what happened. If, in fact, Martha was killed at midnight, where was she between the hours of 10 o'clock and 12? Nobody knows that. Tommy's story has always made me uncomfortable. I don't know if Tommy's telling the truth. Remember, he lied to the police also. That was latest, you know, the latest version that he told the Sutton guys was Martha and I, the mutual masturbation to orgasm. I'm not sure that that's true, and I'm not sure that that happened when that happened. This is a real problem I would have had if I were on the jury.
Well, and to me, though, a key common sense factor is that he's in the Lincoln, and he's seeing Tommy do what he's doing with Martha. He's got hormones. He has the hots for her. It makes no sense to me that he gets in a car and goes to the backcountry and leaves his brother with her. And the second part that is tough to understand is, what's in that 2 hours? What's going on with Martha? How does he suddenly get back her to kill her? It seems the jealousy rage fits right along that timeline.
I agree. It does. It does all fit. But you want to jump in, Bob?
Go ahead.
Well, my interest in Julie's second sighting story is that it's part of this conspiracy to frame Hasbrook and Tinsley for the crime. And it was previously part of this conspiracy to frame Ken for the crime. If you read what Julie was asked on November 15th, 1975, 2 weeks after the murder, this is about returning from having talked to, taken Andrea home.
Mm-hmm.
They say, and Lenny is talking to Julie, he says, "Then you turned into your driveway, locked your car, right? When you got out, was there any movement outside your house?" "No." "You didn't see anybody. Did you hear anything?" "Not that I can remember." "Any dogs barking?" "No, it was pretty quiet because I came inside and I went, you know, back on the porch and I didn't even see any of my brothers." That's what she says in 1975.
And of course, Bobby changes that completely in this book.
Oh, he's changed it so much. To the Sutton Associates, he says, "As I approached the front door, I heard a noise in the bushes and saw a big, dark person crouched moving underneath the kitchen windows."
That's Julie?
That's Julie,
yes.
In the Sutton reports. At trial, she says, "As I was walking to the front door, someone came and ran in front of me going north. I'm not sure what the directions are," et cetera. She tries not to remember that she ever saw Michael. And she says, "Oh, I don't think it was Michael prior to that." But look at what he changes this to. He says, "As she turned her headlights off, she saw a dark figure running the length of the house from left to right in a crouched position." This is from the book, "carrying an object in his hand. She recalls that he was large and possibly hooded. He dashed across the driveway and disappeared between the trees behind the tool set. This would put him within a few feet of Martha and Tommy just as Martha was leaving for home. Julie says she was so shaken by the sight of this man running that she stayed in her car for a few minutes and missed the end of Ellery Queen."
It's almost like it's all made up.
It's completely added to being. It's now she's waiting in her car scared as opposed to walking to it.
Len, let me ask you, Andrea Shakespeare has always maintained that he did not go to the backcountry. And she's quoted as saying, "I can't say how I know, but I can guarantee." Do any of you know why she's so certain?
I don't. And I know Mickey questions her about it, but only briefly. I do not know why. But obviously, that's a damning statement that she made.
It's a damning statement. And Julie originally said he didn't go, too.
Well, Andrea was standing right next to where this figure dashed out and would have heard Julie say, "Michael, come back here." That may be what influenced her to believe that this was Michael staying. And she doesn't remember that. She doesn't remember that. She was pretty well. Mickey did a good job of cross-examining her because she said on the stand that she saw the Lincoln leave, and she didn't. And she had admitted that in prior statements to the police. So she was discredited somewhat, but she was stern. And the other thing that she brought up was when she and Julie arrived home from school that day, Michael had said to her that he and Tommy were the last people with Martha. Which was
this
suspicious.
Is Talk with Jim Campbell. We will be right back.
It started at Bunco Night. A little tickle in my throat, says Sandra. Then comes Colin barking like a seal. That cough, that's the flu. And then it spreads to Edna, to Wiley, to Marjorie. But when it comes to your door, you won't be answering because you got your flu shot at Rite Aid, where they care about you and your health. So while they're seeing doctors and sweating through fevers, you'll be teaching your granddaughter the two-deck shuffle. Shield yourself at Rite Aid before it's too late. If you're over 65, the CDC recommends flu and pneumonia shots. No appointments necessary, and they're free with Medicare Part B. Rite Aid. With us, it's personal. Flu vaccines available while supplies last. Age restrictions apply in some states. See pharmacy for details.
Hi, I'm Joan London. If you're worried about your parent or loved one living alone, like I was, and you want reliable senior care information, then call A Place for Mom, the nation's largest senior living referral service.
Finding an apartment that was on the courtyard with the view of the trees, the view of the ducks, the stream, the creek, all of that, that was what I needed.
You'll get free information on assisted living, Alzheimer's care, nursing homes, even important financial information. Here's the number.
To speak to a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-506-0320. That's 800-506-0320.
A Place for Mom is a free service, and you can trust them to help you. So if you're struggling to find reliable senior living information, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
To speak to a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-506-0320. That's 800-506-0320.
There's more than one way to invest in your education. Investing in the right products, securities, and real estate generates secure and sound futures. What about an investment that retains its value? Consider college real estate. College real estate can provide housing for students and generate returns for their families. Through this special offer from Austin iLabs, you can download the free workbook from collegerealestate.com to see if this investment is right for you. Go to collegerealestate.com/radio.
Are you struggling with addiction or alcohol problems? If you're depressed, drinking, and using drugs, you may need help. And the Affordable Care Act guarantees coverage of substance abuse.
I knew I could get myself out of this. I just needed some hope and some help.
I took the first step to recovery when I made the call.
Call the Addiction Hope and Helpline now for a free assessment with someone who cares. Call 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533.
I feel like I'm losing control. I'm afraid I'll lose my job or even my family.
Call now for hope and help with proven, gentle recovery programs.
I never thought that I could be somebody who didn't drink and use drugs.
I'm in recovery, getting the help I need.
Call the Addiction Hope and Helpline now for a free assessment with someone who cares. Call 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533.
Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing, and our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. And we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. That's 800-430-7570.
What is term life insurance? It's basically a financial protection plan for your family if you pass away. It can be a hard purchase. Think about it. It's one of the few major purchases you can make that you will personally never use. But you've got to have it to protect your family. And you owe it to yourself to shop and compare to get the best possible rates. For term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more, call the Term Lifeline today.
800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068.
Remember, we specialize in term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more. And we have great rates for smokers, too. So call today. 800-957-6068, 800-957-6068, that's 800-957-6068.
BizTalkRadio.com.
And we're back again talking with two experts on the Moxley murder, Len Levitt and Bob Drake. I want to talk first about the Sutton report. And in there, Michael's profile fit by far the most accurate, and that he was lived within walking distance, same socioeconomic status, which Littleton nor the cave theory would have fit, had regular interaction with the victim, strong sibling rivalry, sexually immature under the influence of alcohol, could have been agitated by depression of psychotic proportions. Now, of course, Kennedy says that this is basically a framing by the Skakel family lawyer, Tom Sheridan. Let's hear Cut 18B, Rosanna Scott on Elvis Duran, Fox 5, New York.
The detectives never believed that Michael was the murderer. They, to this day, do not believe that he was murdered. But they were asked by a crooked lawyer who was a consigliere to the Skakel family, a man named Tom Sheridan, to do a worst-case scenario on all of the suspects. In other words, if you could assemble all of the worst facts against the suspect, what would it look like? And he did that for his own reasons, which I show in the book, and then he released that to the public in order to blame Michael.
I want to get your input on that. And also, Sheridan is always on the record as saying he thought Michael was innocent.
Well, Bobby Kennedy just does not know what he's talking about, or maybe he does know and is just lying. Sheridan had nothing to do with the release of that Sutton report. I know because I received the Sutton report. What Sheridan did was he hired the Sutton Associates, quote, to clear the Skakel name, close quote. All that meant was pin it on somebody else. It was Ken Littleton that they were after. He had no motive for framing Michael whatsoever. Sheridan was a friend of the father, Rustin Skakel, known as Rucky. Michael always disliked him for two reasons, it seemed to me. One was that he wanted money out of the trust fund, and Sheridan controlled the funds, and he wouldn't give it to him. The second reason was it was Sheridan who got him committed to Elon, that crazy school where everybody was insane there. Every kid had problems. But here's the interesting thing about Elon. Michael goes up there in early 80s. Everybody says, why did you kill Martha Moxley? Hey, Michael wasn't a suspect then.
Yeah.
The police didn't even, he wasn't on their radar. He was cleared because he was supposedly at the Therrien house. Why did everybody think he was a suspect? It was because his family believed he killed Martha.
Let me ask you this. Why did Tommy and Michael change their stories to the Sutton report, which is what actually blew themselves up?
We are never going to know exactly what happened that night unless one of these two guys makes a deathbed confession. I can only surmise what happened here, that both of them were afraid that they had left some kind of DNA at the murder scene, semen, and each one wanted to cover himself. Their story is, well, they didn't want to admit anything to their father because he had an obsession with sex. I don't know what to say about that. I mean, is that laughable or what? But each one of them has put himself right at the murder scene with Martha. I just don't know what to say with this family.
Michael's not with Martha.
Well,
he's looking for her, but he hasn't put himself with Martha, has he?
Well, okay. You know what I'm talking about here, Rob.
I do. No, I think if you were a police officer, the first thing you're looking for is for people to, I mean, it's all hands on deck. We have this incredibly innocent girl dead on their parents' lawn. Anybody who can help, please come forward. And the two people who had police had any idea where they actually were at the time would have been person number one and person number two, most important people to come forward. They're the people who lied. That's extremely suspicious. But they missed the boat on Michael. And Michael told this story. Bobby Kennedy, in 1983, heard this story from Michael. He's a supposed, he calls himself a former prosecutor because he prosecuted one crime,
right,
one crime that he lost, and then was embarrassed out of his out of his job, however that happened. But when he heard this story, he didn't come forward. It took 12 more years for that story to get to the police, that either of them were in a position to give information about the case. If they're innocent, just to say what lights were on, what person was walking by, what dog was barking, what was happening, that took till 1995.
Let me ask you that. There have been different stories based on who he's spoken to, like Higgins or somebody, that he was seeing Martha shower while he was doing it, that he was actually on the wrong side of the house at John's window, and then finally that he was up in the big pine tree where the body was found. Has he told three different versions of that, or is...
I believe he has, and
that also is kind of a red flag. It's an O.J. Simpson.
And the detective Frank Gar always felt that Michael, he described him as like a tea kettle boiling, and he just wanted to get it out. That he was so consumed with guilt that each time he gave a story, he was putting himself closer and closer to the murder itself. There's just one other point on these on the Sutton report. They did this report on Tommy. The FBI, or the Sutton people, they went to the Behavioral Science Academy of the FBI. And even the report on Tommy was not as prejudicial as the one on Michael. Michael really fitted their profile of the killer to a T.
Yes.
Just peeping.
Now, the question is it not fair that it would be admissible because it was work papers and that kind of thing?
Well, that's what the court ruled.
Profiles aren't admissible. Right. They're no better than polygraphs and everything else. But it is also true that Kathy Morrell did profiles before the Academy group. And if you read Ken Littleton's, Kathy Morrell's report on Ken Littleton, her biography of the problems to be expected from Michael Skakel are as significant as what the Academy group says.
Let me switch bases for a little bit because you're doing a book on Littleton. And Bobby initially fingered Littleton in the Atlantic Monthly article.
Correct.
And in his recent book, he still beats him up pretty bad. Can you play cut three, which is actually from Business Talk with Jim Campbell?
Kenny Littleton, on the other hand, had five separate alibis. Every time he talked to police, his alibis changed dramatically. He failed lie detector tests on multiple occasions. He was linked by police to 20 other serial killings, mainly of young blonde girls Martha's age in Canada and the United States and different places where he'd lived. And he was in and out of prisons and mental hospitals, and he made several statements that appeared to be confessions to the crime.
Okay, Bob, that certainly sounds pretty bad stuff.
Yeah, well, I know. And so I think the book is obviously when I got started on it. He said all this stuff in his Atlantic Monthly article as well, and he's learned to encapsulize it in five short phrases. But I think I just to discuss the serial killer business, because I've gone through and looked at all 21 of the serial killings that he supposedly was associated with. He wasn't associated with the killings. The killings were associated with places that he had been. But let me just give you one example. I have 1 minute left. I shouldn't... probably shouldn't get into it quite yet because it's too long a story. I just want to get one of the serial killings out.
So is it all these alibis, chain stories, are they mainly a manifestation that he got mentally ill eventually?
No, there weren't five stories. These are what I call the five hoaxes.
He's being scapegoated the same
absolutely
way that now the
scapegoated.
Two gentlemen in Bridgeport.
But those five chain stories were Mickey Sherman's inventions, and they were proffers that were offered in the wrong man defense a month before trial. They're copied from Mickey Sherman.
Let me just say on these serial killings, what they did was Ken Littleton went to Massachusetts, and then he went to Florida. Hey, there was a girl who was murdered and raped in Massachusetts at the same time that Ken Littleton was in Massachusetts. And hey, in Florida, a girl was raped and murdered the same time Ken Littleton was in Florida. This is that's what they were doing.
It's more than just that. I don't know if you... let me give you one primary example here. August of 1991, Ken was suddenly got off the wagon. Or is that what it's called, off the wagon, when you start drinking? And he was having the DTs, and he was driving up near Dartmouth College, where we all have some connection.
Yep.
And he pulled over to a Heartland rest stop, and he thought he saw Connecticut plates following him. So he pulled over on the road up near Dartmouth, and he hid in the woods. He hid off to the side of the road for about 5 hours, and then he crawled to someone's house who was having breakfast with his family. And he said, "I need to be in protective custody because people are coming after me. Connecticut authorities are coming to get me. And so they brought him to the Norwich police sheriff, and they had him tested, and they sent him back to McLean Hospital by ambulance, a 2.5-hour drive by ambulance. When Jack Solomon came to follow up this, he talked to the state troopers, and they pointed out that in 1987, at that rest stop, a woman named Barbara Agnew was abducted, who was later killed. Not only that, she was thought to have been one of five nurse-type people who were killed in the surrounding areas by someone that they thought might be the Upper Valley killer. So he wrote those all down in his list of, it's called serial crime, similar crimes analysis. He wrote those down as collections of things. The connection of Ken Middleton to those things is that he was at a rest stop. That's it, a rest stop, where 28,000 cars go by every day. And 4 years earlier, someone was abducted from that rest stop. That's how linked and connected it is. And the average age of those women is probably 25 or 26. None of them are blonde, look like Martha Moxley. He's just making this stuff up to smear people. It's character assassination. Extraordinaire.
You're listening to Business Talk with Jim Campbell from our flagship station, Yale Radio, WYBC, and WTCH Greenwich. Last national segment next.
Here's George Foreman with InventHelp.
Hi, I'm George Foreman. Do you have an idea for a new product or invention? People ask me all the time, George, how do I get my idea in front of companies? How do I get a patent? What do I do next? Do you have the same questions? I'll tell you like I'll tell them all. Call my friends at InventHelp.
Call InventHelp today for free information. InventHelp has been helping inventors for more than 30 years and has sales offices nationwide. InventHelp can submit your invention to companies who are interested in receiving new ideas. If you have an idea and want to try to patent it and submit it to companies, you should call InventHelp today for free information.
Listen, I can't guarantee a company will be interested in your idea, but I believe every inventor deserves the opportunity to step into the ring and take their best shot. Put InventHelp in your corner.
To get your free inventor's information, call 1-800-351-1453. That's 1-800-351-1453. Again, 1-800-351-1453.
Have you written a book and want to get it published? Then call Page Publishing ASAP. We're looking for authors of all types of books. And unlike most publishers, Page Publishing will take the time to review each and every book submitted to us. And we'll give you our feedback. And if we like what we read, we will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, the Apple iTunes Store, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. We handle everything. Editing, cover design, copyright protection, printing, publicity, and distribution. So if you've written a novel, children's book, cookbook, inspirational work, poetry, or a biography and want to get it published, call Page Publishing now for your free author submission kit. Your road to fame and fortune could very well start with this simple phone call.
888-785-0618. 888-785-0618. 888-785-0618. That's 888-785-0618.
Do you have an old car sitting in your driveway? How would you like to learn a hassle-free way to get rid of it, help kids in need, and get a great tax donation in the process? It's real easy. One simple free call to our car donation hotline is all it takes. Call the Neshama Foundation
at 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723.
We'll come pick your car up for free and give you a tax donation for the full value of the car, running or not. The value of your unwanted car will go to help kids in need. It's fast and easy. Just call us and your car will be gone and on its way to helping children in 48 hours. And you get a nice tax deduction. Call the Neshama Foundation now to get rid of your car, help kids, and get a tax write-off.
Call 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. That's 800-721-6723.
National Funding Group has just released $100 million in easy access small business funding to businesses that gross at least $100,000 a year. You can have fast access up to $500,000 in new business capital in as little as 48 hours. Think about the ways you could grow your business if you had up to a $500,000 cash infusion.
Call a NFG funding expert now. The process is easy. It only takes about 5 minutes. Then our management-owned lending team looks at your application for a fast approval. You can get 100% funded in about 2 days. If you need up to $500,000 in working capital to run your business and you gross at least $100,000 a year, call NFG and apply today. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. That's 800-296-1564.
Has your life changed? Are you now in a situation where you need health insurance? Here's some simple advice. Call our health insurance hotline right now. This free service will do all the work for you. Shop the health insurance marketplace and find the plan that best meets your health insurance needs. Don't get lost searching for plans on your own. Let a licensed agent help you for free. According to a report on CNN Money, almost half of those eligible for subsidies are paying less than $3 a day for bronze or silver plans. Remember, under Obamacare, most Americans qualify for health insurance. So get ready to let us do all the work for you and find out the best health insurance plan for your needs. Call this number now.
800-659-7975. 800-659-7975. For your free health insurance quote, call now. 800-659-7975. 800-659-7975.
BizTalkRadio.com.
And we're back for our final national segment on the Martha Moxley murder case, a rebuttal to an interview we did with Bobby Kennedy Jr. And we were on the Littleton alibis and the framing or scapegoating there. Now we're going to go to the most recent one in Bobby's book, which is the caveman theory, Cut 34, which is from 1010 Winds, Al Jones.
After I tracked them down and I had conversations with them in which they acknowledged the particulars that they had been there that night. They knew the inside of the house where they spent the night after the murder, clean off. They had details about it that nobody else has had. And they knew the people from Greenwich, you know, who surrounded Martha Moxley, and those people remembered them. And I tape recorded those conversations, and those conversations are in the book.
Well, this is a pack of lies. No other way to say it. Nobody saw these guys that night, except Tony Bryant, who's the guy who's making all this stuff up. Kennedy is using what I would consider the basest racial stereotype. These two guys were obsessed with Martha's long blonde hair. There's no indication that either of them knew Martha, had ever met Martha. What's happening here is that Tony Bryant is conning Robert Kennedy Jr. with all this racial nonsense, and Kennedy is buying it. He's made up this thing that they were at Jeffrey Burns' house cleaning themselves off after the murder. Where is he getting this from? You know, it really makes me wonder whether there's not a screw loose in Bobby's brain. He's taking something, the fact that they had been to Greenwich at other times and that they knew Jeffrey Burns and had been to Jeffrey Burns' house at other times. And suddenly, these two guys were at Jeffrey Burns' house the night of the murder, cleaning themselves off after they killed Martha. Where does he get this? You know, he's making leaps that are totally unfounded.
All right, let's. I want you to play Cut 13, Ring of Fire, Sam Stater, because that talks about African-American black hairs found on the body.
Martha Moxley's body had been covered with hairs clearly from the person who had done this. The hairs were from an African-American.
Is that true?
No.
Not true?
The hairs were from enough. There was one hair found on a sheet that was called by the FBI, not a Negroid hair, as it's commonly called now, but it had Negroid characteristics. That hair has been compared to Ken Littleton positively by five other experts. It's not even clear that it's a Negroid hair. The key thing I think that you don't want to miss here, I have a quote here from Mark Twain. There are 869 different forms of lying, but only one of them has been squarely forbidden: thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. When Bobby Kennedy says that he has on tape Hasbrook and Tinsley claiming that they were in Belhaven that night, well, you have his phone number. We should call him up right now and ask him, where's the tape? If he can't show the tape, what is he? He's not Bobby Kennedy's son. Bobby Kennedy said, but suppose God is black. What if we go to heaven and we all our lives have treated the Negro as an inferior and God is there and we look up and he is not white? What then is our response? This Bobby Kennedy is framing a black man. He's making up on a national book tour. He is walking around claiming he has this tape that he does not have. If he had that tape, do you think he would have presented it in 2007 when all this stuff got hashed out and five judges have ruled against it being credible? Do you think he would have avoided showing that tape? I don't.
All right, let me ask you a question, moving quickly forward. Bobby maintains all the time that Michael was never a suspect until Furman. Play cut four, which is from Ring of Fire again.
He had never been a suspect in the case. His brother Thomas had been a suspect, one of many, many suspects, incidentally. But he and Michael had never been a suspect until he was made a suspect in a book that was published by Mark Furman, who had gained fame during the O.J. Simpson trial as the racist police officer who was convicted of perjury.
All right, I want to get your comment on that. And secondly, aren't there all kinds of confessions that have been entered in and out of evidence that Michael made, whether it was a LAN or elsewhere?
The answer to your first question is that Michael became a suspect in 1995, and I don't think Furman got involved until 1998 when Dominic brought him in. He became a suspect when I wrote about the Sutton report.
Yeah, I was going to say, there was a gentleman that had it up first. It was you in 1995, right?
Right.
It's also even true, just sorry to interrupt, that Frank Gar wrote a suspect profile of Michael in 1992. So
there you go.
He wasn't a very good suspect because they didn't know that he was lying to him yet.
Well, I can tell you is in 1995, Frank Gar called me after these reports appeared and said, you know, what else do you know? And I said, Frank, everything I know is in that Sutton report. That's my understanding when he became a suspect.
As we get down to the end, Len,
you know something? Bob is right that Frank Gar took over the case in 1991. And what he said to me was that this is when Michael became a suspect in his mind. They put out a tip line, you know, when he expected all kinds of calls to come in about Tommy. And instead, the only calls that were coming in were about Michael.
Unsolved Murders, that TV show, I think.
That's 96. That was later. The tip line is early, in August of 91.
The bottom line, though, it's way before Furman. He continually cites that Michael was never a suspect. Not including the Elan confessions. It's the stuff that you just talked about.
He had nothing. Furman didn't come in until years later.
To his credit, though, what Furman, you know, everyone talks about who contributed what to the case. The one thing Furman did do is by writing that book, he flushed Michael out. They would not have had the book, the tape, the Hoffman tape might never have existed had Mark Furman not had so much bang for the buck in terms of getting a national bestseller out of this.
That's a good point. Now, let's finish up with ethics or collateral damage, if you will. In many cases, Littleton has been destroyed as a human being. Now we have two gentlemen that have been accused as the real killers. Len finishes his recent expose in the Stanford Advocate. Where is it written that a person of privilege and entitlement with a famous name can write lies about innocent people without consequence? To get Bobby's perspective, cut six, which is from WTNH, Scott McDonald.
Michael was never a suspect in this crime until 25 years after the crime took place. He was made a suspect by Mark Furman, who branded him for the first time with his new first name, Kennedy Cousin.
So there you go. The question that Bobby's saying, he's only a suspect because he's a Kennedy cousin, and that's why they want to go after him. And you're saying that, you know, is a person of privilege allowed to attack somebody with impunity?
I just don't know how anybody could be allowed to get away with this kind of thing that Bobby Kennedy has done to to Hasbrook and Tinsley. This is the United States of America. You've got a wealthy guy with a famous name saying these two guys killed Martha Moxley with absolutely no evidence. And how can he get away with something like this? So far, he has been getting away with it.
Thank you very much, Bob Drake and Len Levitt. Len's book, again, is Conviction, Solving the Moxley Murder, Reporters and a Detective's 20-Year Search for Justice. We'll also have up his recent piece in the Stanford Advocate last Sunday. Bob's upcoming book, again, the working title, Bad Faith, RFK Jr. and the Scapegoating of the Skakel Family Tudor. Stay with us to go into overtime. We will go into more deal. We'll continue more with the Moxley murder. Thanks to Len Levitt, Bob Drake, for giving us a full hour and in studio. We'll see everybody next Sunday on Business Talk with Jim Campbell.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com. BizTalkRadio.com.